Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 13 of the Good People, Bad Intentions podcast. And today, as our guest, we will have none other than Brandon Brewer, somebody who's been kind of built up with this podcast. I mean, remember, episode one, we had Aubrey McLeod, somebody who worked with Brandon as far as being a coach, and talked a little bit about his backstory. And then later we had one of his teammates, Sean Finnegan from Ormuchto Boxing, now training at Crandall University. And of course, we just had John Olhauser on as our previous guest. So there's been a strong buildup for Brandon Brewer, the lumberjack, L-Jack. He's somebody that if you talk about boxing in the Maritimes, oftentimes comes up. He's kind of done it all. He's been obviously a fighter, a boxer. He's been promoting. He had his L-Jack promotions that a lot of people in the pro scene in the Maritimes have fought on, including the likes of Ryan Ruzicki. And then we also have the fact that he's expanded beyond just his boxing and promotion. He's now a co-owner at the Coach Lab training. And then he's also a realtor. So I'd like to talk to him, kind of touch on some of the stuff that Aubrey had brought up in my podcast with Aubrey, get his own reaction, and you know, get the story and the scoop about his upcoming fight against Antonio Napolitano. This will be an upcoming fight in March, so I will also be following up on that. And lastly, we'll be trying to extract whatever tidbits and knowledge he has, and maybe also we can get a little bit of the secrets to his hard work ethic, which I think a lot of us could benefit from. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my guest, Brandon Brewer. Thank you so much for coming on, Brandon. I really appreciate it.
Man, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Welcome to Good People, Bad Intentions. My first guest that I had on was Aubrey McLeod. And naturally, like, you came up in the conversation because we were like kind of going back. We were reflecting on Ruzicki and the Bridgerweight title that he went after. And then kind of the fact that, you know, I know you train with Ruzicki, and you actually with a promoter and the main event for some of his beginning fights, right, as a pro?
Yeah, absolutely. I think actually Ryan's here training with me right now. He's okay. Over there watching boxing. So,
oh, awesome.
I don't know. I think the first three, I think we helped out with. He fought on a couple up here in Fredericton, and then we co-promoted his debut down in Sydney, Cape Breton. And that was, you know, the beginning of his climb. So, yeah.
And then Aubrey kind of touched a couple of the bases, because I was, you know, everywhere as I go in Atlantic Canada, when we talk about pro boxers, Brandon Brewer is one of the first names you hear. Like, you have a presence around here that I don't think a lot of other boxers have. Like, a lot of people know about the lumberjack and the plaid, and you know, yeah. And you've promoted your own fights. You've been on DAZN. You've been, you know, you've had cards that have had MMA fights on them, right?
Yeah, it's been, you know, I've been truly blessed my entire career. One thing about me is I've touched a lot of, I guess, groups, as far as like, I've been to university, I was in the military, I was in the carver's union. I've done a lot of things, and I've been blessed to meet a lot of people and gain a lot of supporters, along the way. And, you know, so once I started promoting, I was supported, right? I mean, I was supported before I started promoting, but, once I did start promoting, and the reason why I did was it was just kind of an opportunity. I had a couple, you know, positives. One, it was an opportunity to kind of create a life for myself after, boxing, create a brand and kind of put it in the industry that that I could, you know, make money off of later in life, because we can't box forever. But at the same time too, it was an opportunity to kind of give back to the sport and give other guys an opportunity to let combat sports, boxing or MMA, kind of have an effect on their life the way boxing has had an effect on my life. You know, I think it's the best sport in the world. And it can certainly turn a boy into a man and turn, you know, somebody in a dark place and pull them into the light. So.
And it kind of comes across like you're kind of a self-starter. You're somebody that able to get things done, because I think you also have done real estate, right? You've had like the LJAC real estate, you've had promotions, you've always jumped into things that you think you can do. And I think that's really awesome that, you know, you're not just a boxer, but you're also developing all these other skills and business opportunities.
Well, I mean, I like I said, I can't box forever. Mm-hmm. You know, and I never wanted to be one of those fighters who had to take fights because they needed the money. Mm-hmm. I Floyd Mayweather said it once. He said, "I'll retire from the sport. I won't let this sport retire me." And when you do, you know, as many faculties, you know, as you can, you want to be healthy and happy at the end of the career as best you can. So that was kind of my mindset around it. I never got, like, I started boxing so late that I had done a lot of things prior to, and I never got that degree. I never got that license or anything that, I could kind of hold on to, when I was done training. I didn't want to go back to hammering things and, you know, in the minus 40, my hands are sore. So, that's why I grabbed the real estate, and yeah, it's been good. It's been great.
So after Aubrey, I had your friend Sean Finnegan on, and I hope your opponent's not listening here, your upcoming opponent, because he said he's got 3 hours of sparring footage of him kicking your ass.
Sean has no footage of, he might have footage, but definitely not of kicking my ass.
He was like, yeah, from ages 9 to 21. He said ages 9 to 21. He's got it all, like, he's got all the DVDs, right?
Yeah. Hey, I watched it. Yeah. I watched that podcast.
Yeah, yeah. No worries. You guys got quite the banter back and forth. Is it all love, or is there some potential matchups in the future?
When Sean walked into the club when he was 9 years old, I set up a room inside his head. And I've been living there for probably 12 years now. Sean wants nothing to do with me. He knows it. I know. Everybody knows it. But yeah. Then I had to get him back. I heard what he said. So I know, yeah, you know, yeah. Sean and I, it's all love. Sean's I say he's a good kid. He's, you know, he's a man now. He's, you know, he's really developing into a great guy, a really great guy, you know, on all levels, in and out of the ring. And it's all love. I like Sean. He's a, you know, a good friend and competitive, but that's one common thing we have, so it's good.
Yeah, it's good to be competitive, because if you're not, I mean, yeah, you could take the win, that's all right. I didn't need it, you know yeah. It's
I play this game.
Yeah. And I was like, during that conversation, obviously he was saying like how much he looked up to you. And it was kind of interesting too, because I believe around that time, did you guys both start around the same time, but just different ages?
Yeah. Right around the same time. He was 9 and I was 24 or something like mm-hmm. that. Yeah. Yeah. And, I was sparring on my knees with him for quite a few years, to be honest, probably right up until last year. I think he's taller. He is taller than I am now. So he's Sean's a good guy. He's a smart kid. He's a respectful kid. and he's doing great things in the military at Crandall. And I mean, he's picking up track and field and winning gold medals nonstop. So Sean's got a bright future in whatever he decides to do.
So you mentioned that you were enlisted. Were you like in an NCM role?
I was in the reserves, one army.
Reserves. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, was that the one that's by Ormakto or
same one that Sean is in.
Oh, sweet. Because the reason I kind of got in contact with Sean was there's a period in time when I thought I wanted to join the army, and like I was like, wait a second, there's like this really cool boxing gym that's not too far from, you know, the base and whatever. And and I was chatting with him, whatever. And I think it's like amazing that he's been able to not only compete, but he's been able to, you know, get into the reserves and have that as a potential. And then now he's going into school at Crandall and being able to kind of enrich himself, become more educated and work towards something as far as education. And then maybe that potential Olympic gold in the future.
You never know. The sky's the limit for Sean. Like I said, he, whatever he chooses to do, he's got the work ethic. He's had that from a young age, and he's resilient. He's smart, and he surrounds himself with people. And that's really important.
So when I had Aubrey on, he touched quite a bit about your backstory. I don't know if you had the chance to listen to his, you watched it.
I watched it.
Okay. I don't know if there was anything where you're like, that's kind of not true. But honestly, takeaway that I had was that you were willing to put in the work, you know, like you, it's not like something like you just decide, okay, you know, I want to box. And then the next week you change your mind. He said like something like you took 6 years and you never took really a day off. Like you'd have a fight on a Saturday and by Sunday you'd be running and then going to the gym on Sunday. Is this true?
I don't know. I just, I had it in my head that I had to, the days that everybody else wouldn't have trained, I had to train. Cause I mean, Aubrey and I talked and, you know, I did say, I remember like, what do I have to do, you know, in order to really make a run at this? And he just said, you have to outwork everybody. And so I did, you know, I did. And I knew I was, you know, I knew I was. I sacrificed everything. Like, I mean, I couldn't have put more into it, you know, it wasn't easy, but I mean, any good thing worth going after isn't easy. And I enjoyed it. And it was worth it. You know, it was, I mean, I don't know. I always had to know that I had done something that day and trained that day. And
And I got to ask, were you a good shot? Either from your training in the army or because you had some peasants or whatnot at one of these abandoned houses that you had stayed at in your time when you're developing your career. That's one question I was wondering. I was like, man, this guy must have got pretty good with that pellet gun.
Those weasels, they kept me tested.
When he was telling that whole story, I was just like, wow, like this guy really, he wanted it, he went after it, and he was willing to do whatever means possible to accomplish that.
Yeah, I mean, it was negative into a positive, you know, like you look at the hardships. I mean, like those are what motivate people. Like people who grow up rich, it's been proven that like in that third generation, like they're not rich anymore, they're poor because, you know, things were handed and it was easy. You know, but then the hardships, the motivators, you know, that's what it is. Like when you feel like you don't have a whole lot, and I have the win, that's what I needed. That was what I went after. I needed that win because I felt like I didn't have a whole lot at the time. And That's the way I looked at it.
Now moving towards recent times, I can't imagine that, you know, this upcoming fight, you originally were scheduled twice with Jesse Wilcox, and then now you have a new opponent. Has it been a really rough time the last year or so with all these, you know, changes, or have you been able to just look past it and continue working on your craft?
I've been in tougher times. With what's going on in Canada and the world right now, I have a good life, you know, and there's been frustrations when, you know, a week out from the fight and you've done months of training, definitely frustrated. And then it happens twice. And then he pulls out. It was kind of a kick in the teeth, but, I kind of expected Jesse to pull out, to be completely honest.
Oh, fire.
Well, I don't know. Prove me otherwise.
Did you guys train with each other at all at TNT, or is he just part of the Three Lions like promotion itself?
No, Jesse and I, we've met a few times, you know, like mm-hmm. Jesse's, you know, he's, I don't have anything bad to say about him as far as a person. But no, he trained in Hamilton at, at Steeltown, I think. Steeltown Boxing.
Yeah, because when I met you and I met Ryan and a few other people, I was at the Valentine's Day Massacre and I was cornering with Adam. I had no idea like what I was doing at all. Yeah. I tripped and like my finger like bled and everything all over the bottle. So, yeah, Adam never even got cut. But when I gave him the water bottle, it was full of blood, my own blood, right? So don't wear Timberlands. The lesson, don't wear Timberlands if you never wore them to corner. And then I see Stevie, he's wearing like, you know, like a jogging suit and some trainers. I was like, that's what I should do. That's what a pro does, is, you know, wear something comfy that you can get.
Yeah, exactly. Gotta be able to go up and down them stairs pretty quick. But yeah, look, you're not the first one. I've seen many people fall.
Yeah. I felt really bad. And then I said to myself, like, nobody noticed it. And then Bridget, my coach, is like, yeah, I remember when you fell down. That was really funny. Like, we all laughed. And I'm like, no. Bad enough that, you know, the video is not circulating around. But I'm sure eventually, you know, when things come up and when the podcast blows up, it's people are going to be like, yeah, this was the buddy. Like, he fell down. Funny.
It's all good publicity for you.
But yeah, I remember I met you and I actually met Jesse. We were cutting weight with Adam and like you said, he's a really nice guy and stuff. And I was thinking to myself, like, I was surprised that the match happened. Now Aubrey said, like, with the fact that, you know, it's hard to get opponents from, you know, other countries right now. Like I was thinking what Three Lions was often doing is they have like kind of their fighter and then they get somebody from another promotion to come in.
Yeah.
Are you surprised that you were matched up against Jesse, or did you think that was going to happen? And then beyond that, did you think that your current opponent, did you expect to also go against him at some point?
No, I never expected to fight Antonio. No, I haven't. I never did. No. As far as Jesse, yeah, I wanted to fight him for a few years, to be honest. I knew eventually it might happen. Who knows? We might get in there if he can kind of build up the courage. I don't know.
Okay. And looking at your next opponent, funny enough, Adam, when I was with him, we were actually looking at him for a fight against Adam, and I had done some research on the opponent, and he is somebody who doesn't have as many fights as you have, but he tends to seems to be more of like a power puncher. Without giving your whole game plan, because I know you want to keep that, you know, for the fight. Like, what's your assessment of your opponent? Like, do you see this as a fair matchup, or do you see yourself as having way more experience?
I mean, every fight's fair. I mean, like, he's got Antonio. He's a good athlete. You know, he's an explosive athlete. I think he's a strong kid. Mm-hmm. Good puncher, decent speed. But I'm fast, and I'm a bigger puncher. So, I mean, we can do it either way. It doesn't matter. I can box him. I can outbox him, or I can put the hurt on him, and I'm probably going to do that, so.
Before this fight, I was watching some tape of you just to get a sense. Are you an orthodox fighter, or are you a southpaw?
Whatever gets the job done.
Okay, because I saw your box rec. It said orthodox. I watched tape of you where you're a southpaw the whole entire fight.
Well, I tell you where it comes from. I mean, naturally, I'm right-handed.
Okay,
like I write with my right hand. Mm-hmm. Before my first amateur fight, I was always boxing right-handed. But about 2 weeks before the fight, I broke my right thumb, and I didn't want to pull out. It was a fracture. It wasn't like a, but I mean, it's like, it's kind of, I don't know if you can see, it's kind of crooked, and I can't really compare it to that one. Like, I can't really bend it. So I had a fractured right thumb before my first amateur fight, and I didn't want to pull out because I was so excited. And so instead of throwing the big right hand, I was just like, okay, I'm just going to use it as a jab and just throw a left hand. And yeah, it worked. And I don't know, just the way my instincts kind of go in there. Sometimes I'm right-handed, sometimes I'm left-handed, and I'll like kind of, you know, I'll cycle through. Sometimes it's pretty obvious what a guy can't deal with, and I'll just stick with that. Sometimes you cycle through the right hand stuff and you'll remember what works and what doesn't, and you'll cycle through the left hand stuff and what works and what doesn't, and then you just kind of use that until they figure that out, and then you just flip to something else. So I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, because I was like, man, like, I was just looking, I was like, man, like, I didn't want to get it wrong. I was like, I'm going to interview this guy. Like, is he a southpaw? Is he orthodox? Because I was like, there's a little bit of a discrepancy on the tape. But that's cool that you have that kind of natural ability to kind of see where the fight goes and what your opponent's feeling and stuff. Because, you know, it makes it a really interesting and unpredictable fight, right? They don't know what you're going to do. And
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Kind
of the next thing I want to touch on, because I'm really curious about this. You are a co-owner of Coach Lab Training, correct?
I am, yeah.
Can you talk? Yes, you got the lab. We're in the laboratory right now.
That's right.
Can you just talk a little bit about kind of the beginnings of that and really, like, what is it that you guys offer?
A good friend of mine, Ashley Ward and her husband, Wes, they, you know, had a property, and long story short, half the property wasn't being used, half the building wasn't being used. And we said, hey, let's open a gym. And we had plans into a bigger, a bigger plan as far as a wellness center and stuff like that. But phase one was kind of the fitness. And Yeah, basically, we opened a 24-hour facility, and people can come in and train at our headquarters, but we also offer online programming so that people can get an app on their phone where every exercise that's on the app has a video tutorial in case you don't know what the exercise is. But it also has an analytics, like a database, where you can input all your weights and stuff. And it, once you're done your workout, it gives you all your feet, your analytic feedback saying you just lifted 10,000 pounds or 20,000 pounds with this many reps, and you know, good job and whatnot. And we can kind of interact on the back end with the members and kind of give them some feedback if they don't, you know, if they have a bum knee or something, they don't want to do a certain workout, we can give them a modified exercise. But this, the workouts are also designed to use, be able to modify to do with minimal equipment. So you can do them at home, or you can use them at any gym, like any big, like Good Life, any big box gym, any other gym. So it's basically like an online personal trainer that you can use anywheres from home or a gym. And it's only $1 a day.
You know, oh,
$29.99 a month. Yeah, so it's kind of unique. I think the number one thing, number one reason why a lot of people don't go to a gym is because they don't really know what to do. Mm-hmm. And you know, but and then the number one reason why a lot of people don't get a personal trainer is because they cost like $80 an hour. So if you can kind of fix both problems by guiding people on what to do at a cost efficient price, then you kind of you're pulling people off the couch who don't want to be there but can't afford or don't have the knowledge on what to do when they get to the gym.
And I think this is also really important with all the uncertainty around the gym. Sometimes having that extra security, I just got to keep my iPhone. I mean, that's giving power to everyone, you know, that they can absolutely. Just, yeah.
Personal trainer, yeah.
Yeah. And you have to pay extra for LJAC to do the demonstration of the rep, or is there an appearance in a couple of them, or?
No, there actually is. Actually, I give some boxing tutorials.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, they can get some boxing tutorials if they subscribe to the app. I'll drop it right now. Was it, I'm going to give you the website just so we're on topic
here. Okay.
What is it? Thelab.health. So, I mean, yeah, thelab.health.
I like the dot health. It's like, yeah.
Absolutely.
In case you thought it was something else.
Health. Well, physical health, and mental health, same thing. You know, we have to, especially in challenging times like today, everybody's locked up. At least they can get a workout in a home. Yeah.
Taking a step back to what we were talking about earlier about the earlier days, because I talked to Aubrey about this, but it's one thing to talk to him, but then to talk to you, what kind of gave you this extreme work ethic and determination that seems to, no matter what kind of goal you have, you keep going towards it? Was it something like some people that you grew up with, your family, your friend, some friends, or?
Yeah, I mean, my dad and my stepdad are both lumberjacks. And no matter where I was, I was chopping wood. And my mom is just one of the hardest working people I've ever met. And everybody in my family, they're all just workers. I mean, you know, we're from Nakwik, home of the world's largest axe. You know, so you don't grow up in that type of environment without work ethic. You know, so
the world's big. There's the biggest axe in the world.
Google Nakwik, Nakawic, home of the world's largest axe. Just type that in, and you'll see it.
Oh my goodness!
There you go.
No wonder, because I was thinking to myself, like, maybe like he watched one of those Floyd Mayweather like Showtime workout things when he was just splitting the wood. That
I respect it, but Floyd, you come up and I'll show you how to swing that axe.
Well, it was like I thought it was kind of funny because he was like getting him like brought to him like just to hit it. And I'm like, okay, you know,
the concept is, I mean, it's the workout.
No, yeah, and I wasn't trying to take it away from that. I was just like, yeah, well, And I imagine with a lot of your lumberjacking and cutting, like, it was probably, did you have a wood stove, or did you have like, did you have a help out with the business aspect of cutting wood?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up with my mom and my stepdad for the most part, and we had a wood stove there. And I was the guy to fill it and throw all the wood in. And, you know, if I got in trouble at school, I had school suspension, and to the woods I went. And same thing when I went up to my dad's, hit a portable sawmill, like a wood miser. So I was cutting up logs and sawing lumber with him, or in the woods cutting firewood, because we did, my grandmother's and everybody in the family was firewood. So I couldn't get away from it.
And one of the guests I had, Reed Primo, the fighting farmer, up and coming talent from Nova Scotia, Oxford, Nova Scotia. He's really into the wood as well. He talks about kind of the discipline and the hard work that goes into, you know, obviously like harvesting your own wood, you know, putting undercover, you know, all that stuff that you said. So would you say that to some extent, you know, being around the lumberjack business, it kind of influenced that work ethic? It made you stronger?
Absolutely. Yeah, you don't know it until, because it's what you know. You only assume that everybody else is growing up that way. And, you know, and then when you grow up and you get, I don't know, say in the gym, maybe, like, I was never afraid of work. In fact, that, like, I kind of embraced it. The more you kind of hate it when you're younger, you know, because, I mean, most kids don't like the work. You grow up that way, and you kind of, as you get older and you start working with other people, and I've worked with some great people, but you realize that, I don't know, I was just willing to go a little bit further and a little bit longer and a little bit harder than some of the other guys around me, I guess. And then you build strength off that. You realize, you're like, okay, you build confidence off it.
And I know you also worked in construction. Do any of like the tradesmen that you worked with, tradeswomen that you worked with in the past, do they still keep in touch with you? Or are they like, are they proud of you and what you've accomplished and what you've been able to, you know, do with boxing?
I mean, it's kind of a mutual respect, because, I mean, like, I was just talking to a couple of my friends here last week, and I mean, they've done great things with, you know, in the carver's union, and other guys own their own businesses, building homes, and electricians, and it's mutual respect. But yeah, I'm definitely stay in touch with a lot of them. You know, a lot of them lifelong friends, and you know, it's fun to catch up. I guess nobody's going out and doing anything too much fun there these days, but I do try to stay in touch as much as I can with them. And they've been to all the local fights and some of the ones further away too. So it's fun.
Going back to talking about, you know, LJAC promotions and stuff. I'm just curious, like, when you were promoting a card, but also being like the main event, was it hard to focus on the fight itself? Like, when you had all these different moving pieces that you also had to deal with and all that stuff? Like, looking back,
I don't know what I was doing. Like, I honestly, I don't know. Like, it was a matter of probably, we did eight shows. And it was just like that. Because as soon as one got done, it was on to the next one. And so it was, I don't know what happened. I don't know what I was doing. Like, I would never do that again. That was the most, like, honestly, I all of a sudden, after eight shows and, you know, a few years later, my body was burnt out mentally, emotionally, physically. I was just done, you know, and it served its purpose, and there's certainly no regrets at all, because everything happens the way it's supposed to. But I wouldn't go back and do it again. Like, I wouldn't do it again in the future, because it was, yeah, I mean, you're, it's hard to focus. It was, yeah.
Because, and I don't know to what extent these people actually are part of their own promotions, but, like, it seems like the new status quo when it comes to boxing is you got somebody like Mayweather, somebody like MVP Jake Paul coming along. And yeah, now all of a sudden they don't want to, be in somebody else's promotion. They want to be their own. And yeah, I just think to myself, like, when your competition gets higher and higher, wouldn't you think that you want more of your brain or, focused on just that, the task at hand? Cause I imagine, like, the days leading up to the fights, like, you're not thinking about the fight at all.
It was tough. It was tough to separate them. It really was. And like Mayweather, and I'm not to say that, they didn't do any work, because I'm sure they did, and not to discredit my team, because I had a fantastic team. But the level, I had this image in my head of what the show was supposed to look like. And it wasn't a boxing event. It was just an event. And it was supposed to be Vegas style. And it was supposed to be the best. Because that was my opportunity and to prove to people that I wasn't just a boxer, that I was a businessman and I was a damn good one too. So that when I started business and created businesses after that, they were worth supporting because they were going to be a good business. So my team, they didn't have that standard. Not to say that they didn't want perfection, but it was before they even try to get it, I was demanding it, and wasn't, I wasn't willing to, like, throw everything on them. In fact, it was always them say, hey, let me help. Come on, like, go train, focus on that. And I had good people around me. I really did. I get that fighters want to, get a piece of the gate. That's what they want to do. They want to get a piece of the ticket sales at the promoter. And I can respect that, but I don't recommend being the lead runner on that. Get a team behind you, a good one.
So I had my second guest, Kyle, the Real Deal McNeil, which I think he's fought on at least one of your cards, correct?
I think so. Yeah, I think Kyle, I can't remember. We've had,
but he's in your rate. He's on your radar, or you?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I know Kyle really well. Yeah.
Okay, Real Deal Promotions is something that he wants to start up. So, yeah, if you were to give him, like, one piece of advice, like, if he was listening right now, like, what would you say? Just don't put too much on yourself and let your team.
I would say create a system. Create a system a long ways out and try to stick to that system, have it on paper and know who's doing what, obviously, so that there's no stone unturned and nothing gets missed. Mm-hmm. Don't try to go too big or off the hop, because too big means more moving parts. And I'll tell you one thing, you think of it like this. I always tried to have like 10 or 11 fights. You got 10, let's say 10 fights. Mm-hmm. That's 20 fighters that you got to deal with. That's two coaches usually per fighter. So that's 40 coaches, 20 fighters, 40 coaches, okay, that you got to deal with. Flights, hotels, whatever. But then these fighters also have to get their doctors. Every one of them's probably got a different doctor. So now you got 20 fighters trying to go. And they had to see two doctors, because you have to have your medical, your physical exam, but you also have to get like an optometrist for your eyes. And so that's two doctors per fighter. So that's also 40 doctors you have to deal with. And there's so many moving parts that the smaller, start small, 6-7 fights, aim for 8, one or two will fall out. You have 6, started a small venue, so your bills aren't you know, super high and you're not stressing about sales and whatnot. You want to keep your overhead as low as you possibly can and start, you know, have tickets on sale 10 to 12 weeks out. That's my advice.
I think he really appreciate. I'm gonna send this to him and be like, here you go. Cause I know this is something he really wants to do. And it seems like with every card he's a part of, he's the one that sells so many tables, and he's so personable about it. I mean, you see him taking pictures, he's shaking the guy's hand, thanks for the support. He's always putting it out there. And I'm like, man, like this promoting thing, it might be a good angle for him.
I think Kyle, I mean, of all, you know, I know a lot of fighters, and I think Kyle would be one of the best promoters, 100%. I think his challenge would be taking on too much himself, because he's a worker. Kyle's a hard worker, but he can do it. I know he can do it. He's a good ticket seller, and like you said, he's very personable with people, and he's a smart guy, so he can do it.
And kind of getting to the closing topics, one thing that I also find really interesting that you touched about earlier, and maybe there might be somebody listening, I know for me too, like there's a lot of people that get into boxing at a really young age, right? Sean, 9 years old, now he's 21. Yeah. So he's been around the block, but you know, you had a little bit of a later start and you had a lot of success in boxing. And for anybody listening, is there an age that is too late to get into boxing, or can we all kind of take that advice that Aubrey had told you, where you just got to work your butt off and make up?
Well, no, there's no age. I mean, get into boxing for what? You know, the goal is going to be different for everybody. Mm-hmm. I would recommend, you know, somebody who's in a seniors complex, if somebody's coming over willing to hit the pads for you, absolutely. Because I tell you, like, it's just such a, you know, it releases endorphins, is a stress reliever. It's just it's a good feeling, you know, and to get that release. As far as, you know, competitors, I've known people getting in the mid 30s, late 30s, and just, you know, wanting to have that one fight. In the 40s, just wanting to have that one fight. Why not? Why not? You know, as long as you have a good coach who's going to match you up accordingly, make sure everything, you know, you're not feeding you to the dogs. Like, yeah, I mean, even your 50s, like, and the thing is, what people need to understand, and this is kind of, it kind of knocks the stigma away from boxing. Like, so you get 100 people, and maybe 100 people go to the box club. Maybe, we'll say less than 5%, probably, we'll say 5%, end up wanting to spar and just try it. And then maybe one or two out of them actually want to go and fight. So 2%, we'll say, actually end up having a fight. Probably less than that. So like boxing, people say, you should go try boxing. I'm like, I don't want to get punched in the face. You're like, that's not, you know, neither do I, you know, neither do I. But like boxing is for everybody. It's such a good stress reliever. It's such a good for your mental fitness, for your physical fitness. It's one of the best workouts as far as strength, agility, conditioning, and stress reliever. I think it's the best sport in the world. So everybody should be getting into boxing at every age.
Because I had John Olhauser on. I don't know if he's on your radar, but he's the coach.
Yeah.
Okay. He started later than most.
Absolutely.
And you know what? He's taken it with a stride. He's, you know, coached some really great fighters at Crandall University.
He got announced that the Bahamas national coach too.
Yes. Yes. It's Bermuda.
Bermuda, sorry, yes.
Yeah,
Bermuda.
Yeah. I made the mistake because I was reading the headlines while talking to him, which, pro tip, don't ever read an article while trying to talk to somebody. But it's going to be in Ecuador, the tournament, but for Bermuda with an upcoming guest I will have on is Adrian Roach. So I will have him on soon. And he's got the whole story about the fact that he's kind of like Bermuda's hope for for getting some hardware, some medals in the next 2024 Olympics. So like storyline wise, I mean, it's obviously a big story for Bermuda, but it's also a really big story for New Brunswick and the Maritimes.
John's doing great work down there. Like that whole Crandall University and the boxing team is just, I mean, they've got one of the best guys in multiple countries. They're training now, and John's ambitious. He's a good guy. He's very good with people. He's great with the fighters, and just a good group, good energy down there. Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, I really appreciate you coming on here. I know, schedules and everything like that can be really busy. So I appreciate you giving me some time out of your day. I really look forward to this upcoming fight. The date is going to be March 19th. Ooh, mark your calendars. 4 weeks
from Saturday, that's right.
4 weeks. It's going to be in Hamilton, Ontario, going against Antonio Napolitano. I hope I didn't butcher his last name.
I think you got it.
Okay. Yeah, so it's going to be a really interesting fight. We got the veteran versus up and comer who's more of a power puncher.
I would say I'm more of a prospect.
Okay. You're a prospect.
Time will tell.
Yeah, I think you're a prospect. Prospect veteran.
We'll see. I appreciate it. Thank you, Matt.
I love the confidence, because at the end of the day, like this is a fight, and you know you're going to battle. So
absolutely. Can't wait. Looking forward to it.
And hey, keep up the really good work with the lab, the coach lab. I think that's really awesome. I think it's helping a lot of people that are in a very, dire need for this type of fitness and coaching.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. And good, you're doing a great job, man. I've seen all your podcasts.
Awesome. Oh,
I have.
Fan alert.
I have. I've been creeping and watching.
Any advice? Like, this doesn't even have to be on air, but like any advice that you're seeing?
You know what? Like, I'm pretty critical on things. But I'll be honest. You ask the right questions, you don't drag on, you got good people, you're doing a good thing, man. Just keep it up. Keep doing what you're doing. And I tell that to you off air, because you're doing a hell of a job, and just keep doing what you're doing.
Well, I think most fighters fit in this category. Maybe you agree or disagree, but yes, fighters, they try to take people's head off. But when you get them outside a box and they're having a beer or something like that, everybody's nice guys, right? Good people to get along, guys, girls, good people to get along with. And that's the whole idea about this brand is, they're good people, but when they get in the ring, they show those parts of themselves that, maybe all that pain that they went through in their life, other things, they get to channel that into something positive. With boxing and, absolutely, strong focus on mental health. That's something I want to get into more in the future is maybe absolutely starting some type of thing for youth and mental health. And yeah,
it's much needed in today's world, And that's it. Like I love it. You're doing a good thing, man. And just keep it up.
All right. And tell your pal Ruzicki that I Matt will. Said, Matt
I said, I will for sure.
Yep. All right. And the Bruiser. I didn't forget the Bruiser too. There's two. With Ruzicki, there's two.
We keep the Bruiser locked up.
Locked up. Okay.
Cool. Hell Decker locked up.
All right. And hey, who knows? Maybe I'll see you guys sometime soon at Tribal. Or see you in Dartmouth sometime. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And best of luck. I know he also has a fight coming up that day as well. So best of luck to both of you guys. You guys represent us Maritimers really well.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Matt. Keep doing your thing, man.
All right. Appreciate it. Take care, buddy. And as always, guys, I hope you appreciated this podcast. It certainly was amazing to have Brandon on. I feel like we finally finished our first storyline of the podcast. You know, we had our beginning, we had the build up, and now we have the big guns, Brandon Brewer himself coming on. It meant a lot to have him on. Of course, we had a really good conversation, touched a lot of different subjects, and of course, more pressing is his upcoming fight. He's only 4 weeks away from that. So I, of course, want to wish him, as well as Ryan Rizicki, one of his stable mates, the best of luck in their upcoming battle. And yeah, as Brandon has said, it's never too late to get into boxing. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're in your 20s like me, and you want to start boxing, and maybe you even wanted to do something competitive, it's never too late. And of course, if you're in your 60s, you haven't started boxing, you're in a senior's home, 70, hopefully you're not in a senior's home when you're in your 60s, but if you're in a senior's home, you know, and you want to get a little bit of activity, and you're able and you're capable, and you want somebody to, you know, get somebody to get some mitts and start hitting the mitts, right? It's really good exercise. It's really good for the mental health, getting all that stress out, especially during these times where you're pressed inside most of the time with these lovely masks that we've all added to our wardrobes. So without further ado, guys, take care. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the channel on YouTube or on your preferred podcast platform. That way, when we have the new episode out, you won't miss it. You'll be the first one to like, comment, and share. That's how we get the word out. The message is simple, everybody. Be a good person. And all those bad things, you know, you might have some pain in your life. Put it on the bag. Put it towards something that, you know, furthers yourself and your career. And you know, make a passion out of the stuff that you've gone through, right? That's the message, guys. Mental health also is a really important thing. I touched on that in this episode. If you guys are listening to this and you think of some really cool ideas that this brand can get involved with the community, and then the local community, and then also the global community with respect to youth and mental health, give me a message. I'm really looking into trying to give back, and of course sharing wonderful stories from all my guests that lift us up and inspire us. So yeah, guys, that's all for today, whatever time you're listening to it, and we'll catch you on the flip side. Take care.